The real estate market in the Treasure Valley is picking up, and now is a great time to think about taking action. Whether you're a first-time home buyer, looking to upgrade, or thinking about selling and cashing out, consider reaching out to our sponsors Jesse Taff with Waypoint Real Estate Group and Bryce Gonzer of Fulcrum Home Loans. They've been able to help both buyers and sellers make deals that work for them in a challenging market. If you're thinking about buying this summer, Jesse and Bryce are still seeing good opportunities for existing and new construction homes. And paired with great loan products and more favorable rates, this might be the time for you to reach out to them and take steps towards your home goal. Find them on the web at www.waypointidaho.com and www.fulcrumhomeloans.com.
Treasure Valley Dermatology has officially moved into their gorgeous new space in Meridian. Their new location is located at 2535 East Fairview Avenue in Meridian. Dr. Dustin Portella and his team of board-certified dermatologists and physician assistants have extensive knowledge and experience in diagnosing disorders of the skin, hair, and nails. They specialize in treating both children and adults with both common and uncommon skin problems. They treat acne, warts, hair loss, eczema, skin cancer, itchy skin, perform skin checks, have a comprehensive skin cancer prevention system, and offer many more services. Not to mention a full new on-location shop for medical-grade skincare, including Dean by Dr. Dustin Portella. We are so excited for this new addition to the Treasure Valley.
This is the Boise Bubble Podcast. Welcome back to the conversation. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is Shane Plummer. The annual Idaho Gives community nonprofit fundraiser is upon us once again. And in this episode, we visit with Kevin Bailey of the Idaho Nonprofit Center, who walks us through this year's event and how to get involved. In addition to Kevin, we brought in spokespeople for two of the nonprofits participating to spotlight just a sampling of the amazing causes taking place in our state. Scott Curtis, CEO of Idaho Youth Ranch, and Bart Cochran, CEO of Leap Housing. We learned so much about these great groups and are hoping to get each of them back on the podcast to dive deeper into the needs that are driving them to help our community. We encourage all of you to participate in Idaho Gives by visiting the website idahogives.org, researching the over 600 participating nonprofits, and making a donation. The event takes place from Monday, April 29th through Thursday, May 2nd. And you can learn more about the other two guests at youthranch.org and leaphousing.org. Welcome, everybody, back to the podcast. Today, we're talking about nonprofits. We have Kevin Bailey with the Idaho Nonprofit Center back with us today. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Natalie and Shane.
Good morning.
And we've got two other guests with us as well that represent the nonprofits that Idaho Nonprofit Center supports. We have Scott Curtis with the Idaho Youth Ranch. Hello, Scott.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And we've got Bart Cochran with Leap Housing. Hello, Bart.
Hi, Natalie and Shane. Glad to be here.
We're excited to learn a little bit of both of your organizations and share that with the Valley. But Kevin, let's start talking to you. It's springtime, and as everybody in the Valley knows, it's the season for Idaho Gives. So tell us about what's coming up, the dates of the event, and where people can go to find information. Let's just start there.
Yeah, so Idaho Gives, it's our 12th year with this statewide giving event. And so that's really exciting. I think we're at a total giving event, you know, over these past 11 years of $23.6 million. So this year we'll definitely cross the $25 million mark. And I always forget, like, what's the 25 anniversary or a year anniversary gift? Is it like silver, copper, or something?
I think it's silver.
Silver. How do you know that?
It's like a silver anniversary.
Like Hallmark used to tell us that, but okay. Mm. Yeah, silver. Okay.
Amazing trivia there. So we'll cross the $25 million mark this year for sure. And it's a four-day giving event, April 29th, May 2nd. Over 600 nonprofits are signed up. We've got nonprofits from all over the state, almost every county represented, urban areas, rural areas. We've got every subsector of nonprofits represented, from animals to trail conservation, housing, arts, mental health services, youth services, you name it. So it's a really fun event. I think the most fun part about the event for me is I always learn something new every year. And I think you know, Idahoans, especially all the new Idahoans that are moving here, they can come here and invest in the community, come here and invest in causes they care about, hopefully open up their wallets, their time, talent, and treasure, and give to, you know, nonprofits that make our communities places where everyone can thrive. We always like to say in our office that Idaho runs on nonprofits. So whether it's providing housing like BART does, providing youth mental health services like Scott's organization, Idaho Youth Ranch does, the arts, conservation, beautification, you name it. It's nonprofits that make our communities great places to live. And Idaho Gives is a really great way to recognize that and a great way to celebrate that.
Every time we have you on, Kevin, I am reminded of how many nonprofits we have across the valley and how many awesome things they've done for the community as well. When we had you on last time, we got a great response from the audience just talking. So many people didn't know what Idaho Nonprofit Center was. So just give us a quick explanation or a reminder of what you do and how you interact and interface with the individual nonprofits across Idaho.
Yeah, so we kind of joke, we sometimes feel like we're the best kept secret in Idaho among nonprofits, but more people know about Idaho Gives than our center, the Idaho Nonprofit Center, but we've been around for 23 years. It was originally started as a nonprofit support organization, realizing that nonprofits, you know, need support in all the areas of their development, whether it's fundraising training, board governance training, executive leadership training, nonprofit finance, you name it. And then about 10 plus years ago, we started to get involved in a little bit more advocacy, making sure that nonprofits had a voice, especially in state legislation. Just like any business sector, nonprofits are part of the business community. We need to have a bottom line that makes sense. We employ over 67,000 people as a sector across the state. We're the fifth largest private sector employer in the state. That means we have to make sure the profit and loss statement makes sense at the end of the year, whether we're raising enough money, getting enough grants, managing expenses, providing all those services. And that's a tough business, right? And every year there's challenges with that, and our nonprofit leaders face that. And so we're there to support them. We're there to be their advocates, bring people together, do fun things like this, and raise the profile of the sector as well, which is really central to our mission.
Awesome. 600... More than 600 nonprofits represented across the state. Give us the dates of Idaho Gives and where people can go.
Yeah, so April 29th through May 2nd. You can go to idahogives.org, and there's events happening all around the state. So there's a number of events happening in the Treasure Valley. I saw one nonprofit, I think it was City of Good. They're organizing an executive director karaoke night. I think it's the Monday, April 29th or Tuesday. I'll have to check our calendar, but all those events are listed. So if you want to see nonprofit executive directors make a fool of themselves downtown over a beer or two, you can head down there. Lost Grove, the brewery, will be doing a big event, a block party again. So lots of good stuff going on, but we just encourage folks to go to idahogives.org, find causes that you care about, get your kids involved, maybe give them an allowance of $50 and make them donate to 10 different things they care about. Get them involved in kind of flexing that charitable muscle. That's what we love to see.
Oh, I love that idea. Yeah,
that's a great idea. Well, let's segue into two specific nonprofits from the Valley. Scott, let's start with you. Idaho Youth Ranch. So many people driving around, they've seen the thrift stores, and they may not necessarily make the connection to the global purpose of what the Idaho Youth Ranch is all about.
Thanks, Shane. I appreciate it. And feel free to jump in if I just start rambling on, because I can talk about the Youth Ranch and our mission for a long time. And thank you kicking it off by mentioning the thrift stores. Right, we're really proud of those mission locations, and they're in 24 communities across the state of Idaho. Our thrift stores are, and they're real community centers of service and getting people engaged with our mission and doing workforce development for young people at those thrift stores. What you mentioned, though, is also the thrift stores really are a backbone of support for all of our direct service work and behavioral health for youth and families. So Idaho Youth Ranch was founded in 1953. So we're in our 71st year, and founded in Rupert, Idaho. And it was the ranch originally, was the one location. And our great founders, Reverend James Crow and Ruby Carey Crow, started bringing in boys, what they called wayward boys, boys that were getting in trouble and wanting a ranch lifestyle to help them, you know, create a better future for themselves. So our history is really solid there. It's pretty cool Idaho history. We're Idaho grown, and now we're throughout the state in about 30 locations. We primarily focus on youth who are experiencing some level of crisis or mental health issues, and their families. That includes outpatient care. So we have outpatient therapeutic centers. We have three of those for in-person counseling, basically. And our staff really do focus primarily on youth and adolescents and those that have experienced some level of trauma or going through some sort of crisis in their lives. We also have the ability to do that outpatient therapy in any county in Idaho through our telemental health program. Mm. And then some people have heard of us because we have a pretty unique therapy program for some of our youth called equine assisted therapy, where we actually get the therapists and the youth and our horses together. And that's a pretty incredible relationship that forms and helps a lot of our young people have breakthroughs. So that's one of our therapeutic modalities. Mm-hmm. We also are an adoptions agency and got into that work starting in the early 80s. And that's run about out of our North Idaho office. And as I mentioned, we're a workforce development program. So we have dozens of youth every year that enter a program where we train them on workforce and give them mentors and give them work experience. And that's actually a paid program for those young people. So,
well, you guys really run the gamut from health to workforce development. Sure. And the horses, I think, are incredible also. Yeah, that's great.
Probably what we're most well known for is our residential care. And that was the foundation of our organization, right? 70 years ago with the ranch was residential. We have two primary residential programs. One is the Hayes Shelter House in Boise, which has been serving the Boise and Treasure Valley communities for 50 plus years. And that's an 18 bed facility that really works with youth and families that are in real crisis. It's the only licensed facility that can take an unaccompanied youth. Mm-hmm. So runaway, homeless, youth that are in foster transition, things like that. We have an incredible staff there working with them. And then many of you know, but if you don't, I'm excited to share that we have opened Idaho's psychiatric residential treatment facility in Caldwell, just outside of Middleton. And that's where I'm sitting today. That's a 64 bed facility, really to take in young people that are having serious psychiatric issues, mental health diagnoses like depression and anxiety and PTSD, and work with them and their families in a 24-hour residential program. So that's considered long-term residential care, although long-term isn't what it used to be. It's not a year or 2 years. We're really talking about more like, 4 to 6, 4 to 7 months of really caring for youth and taking care of them. So that program opened in August after an incredible statewide campaign where the good folks all across Idaho came together and said, we need this facility. Idaho is one of a handful of states that did not have this kind of service. And so for years, we have been sending our young people to other states far away from their families and communities to get their treatment. So we're pretty excited to be stepping into that space, and we are growing. And,
have you seen quite a rise of need for that in the last 5 years or since?
Yeah, the statistics are pretty stark in terms of mm-hmm. what kids are experiencing. And this is an exciting show, but one of the downer pieces about what's going on in Idaho is just our suicide rate. Mm-hmm. We're one of the leading states in the nation in terms of our suicide rate for young people. It's now the leading cause of death in Idaho. So the need for residential has gone up. The mental, I just use that as one data point to show the mental health stress on our young people is pretty significant.
Yeah.
Yeah. As parents of teenagers and just being really immersed in that culture, it's just, we compare it to the feeling of the 90s and obviously it's wonderful we were able to talk about it so openly, we have the words, but there's just so many issues we weren't expecting to be addressing as parents. And sometimes we feel very lost. It's like we're the first generation of parents that have really are handling this on the front lines. And when there's no resources, it's just, where do we go? So that's wonderful that's available.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Natalie. And on the bright side of that is that we are talking about it. Mm-hmm. We're probably the first generation that's just so openly talking about it. That's what we found with our capital campaign to build this, is it was no longer people saying, oh, I heard about that, or mm-hmm. that happened to somebody, or that everyone was saying, oh, I know someone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know a family member of mine or our neighbor or one of my kids' friends, et cetera, that's really struggling. And I think that's really healthy that we're being open and the adults are talking about it.
Yes.
Scott, I'm sure that because this is your wheelhouse, you guys are digging into some of the root causes of mental health in adolescents. What are you seeing about social media? And if you could give parents and families advice of how to manage that and how that factors into the mental health landscape, what do you think about that?
Wow, Shane, that's probably a whole program to talk through that.
Maybe that was too deep.
And maybe we should do a whole podcast about
that. I'll just give the short primer, I would say, is there is a lot of great research out there. And if people want to just go to the CDC, they'll see some pretty stark reports, even one that came out last June from them, talking about what the data is showing about the impacts of social media and the vulnerability of our kids. And particularly how... I'm going to get on, and I'm not just talking about the bullying and things like that that people hear about, but it's also how our young people are seeing other people's lives through a curated lens. Mm-hmm. In other words, they see it, they see and get this impression that everybody else is more beautiful, having more fun, has more resources, is smarter. It's obviously not true, but that is really impacting our young people, their self-esteem, their anxiety, their depression. So that was a real brief answer to what what is an appropriate call out by you in terms of what's going on with
I was reading about anxiety lately and the rise in anxiety and ADHD diagnoses in teenagers, and just thinking about social media and our teenagers' exposure to the world at large was so different from what it was for us back in the 90s. I mean, we're all old enough here, except for maybe Kevin. You look fairly youthful these days, but... But we got our news from the news, from network news, and that was it. And so you didn't really know what was going on outside of your individual community. These days, kids see everything, every problem, every war, every riot, every shooting that is happening across the entire world at their fingertips every day, blasted at them. And they
You're 100%
have no...
Correct. One thing that hasn't changed from our childhoods is brain development, and it takes a while for this brain to develop. And the last area of the brain to develop is the frontal lobe, which really is where our judgment is. It's what allows us to be objective when we're dealing with disparate information. And our young people today are being faced with information they're trying to process, and their brains aren't developed at the level where they can do that logically or objectively, which puts them really at risk for what you're talking about. There's way too much input for them to process in a healthy way.
Yeah, I've been working in social media for 17 years, and it's been interesting from, you know, starting right when social media started and feeling my own mental distress and seeing it. But our children are not allowed on social media. We have an 18-year-old who does not have social media yet. And they can't come to me saying, "You don't understand." I'm like, "Oh, I understand. And I love that you're officially an adult, but your brain is nowhere close enough to understand that the whole, you know, we had playgrounds and that's what we were competing with, and they have the entire world." Mm-hmm. So I think that is a conversation we should probably have, a larger one, because I think also giving parents the letting them harness that ability to say no is crucial, because I think a lot of times parents don't realize that that is an option to keep their kids away from social media.
So, Scott, 100% correct. In the essence of time, tell us a little bit about where people can find resources and find opportunities to contribute.
Yeah, access to all of our information is at youthranch.org. Whether it's people looking for help, there's a button to click on. Whether it's people wanting to join our team or people wanting to donate, there's very quick links. And thank you to Idaho Nonprofit Center for all their support with Idaho Gives. To Bart, you're going to hear from in a minute, for the work he's done. We're excited about Idaho Gives. It's a great opportunity for people to get exposed to all the great work across the state. We had a donor come forward and say they'll match any gifts through Idaho Gives. And I know other organizations are having some of the same things. So I encourage people to get on there and look at the stuff that they're passionate about, and maybe explore something they didn't know about. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Let's transition. Bart Cochran with Leap Housing. I did not know about your organization, but when I started looking into it, 10 minutes is not nearly enough time for us, Bart. We've got to talk more. But tell us about your organization, what you're doing in the Treasure Valley and beyond the Treasure Valley. You guys have some operations in Mountain Home also, so we're excited to learn more. Tell us.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Well, you may have noticed that the ability to afford housing is becoming more and more difficult.
What?
Right?
I'm shocked.
The best primer, right? Basically, Idaho goes from the best kept secret, the best place to in-migrate to, It's ranked one after the next best place to live. Now we're ranked high in unaffordability. And so where the nexus of that is the cost of housing versus the wages that are accessible to folks. So they just don't match up. There's a very large diversion that happened in about between 2013 and today, basically the last decade, that has created this chasm and made it very difficult for folks to access housing, especially folks who are on limited income in the community. So our organization, Leap Housing, is a nonprofit organization. We would consider ourselves a state of Idaho nonprofit. We're focused in the state. Our objective is to create 1,000 housing opportunities across the state of Idaho by 2026. And really what we are real estate practitioners. We're folks who have a deep knowledge of real estate and development. And we came together in 2018, 2016, sorry, and we said, you know what? We need to leverage these skills in a way that serves this population that the market is leaving behind. And by that market we're talking about, just to sort of wax just a tiny bit of jargon, what we're really talking about is 80% of area median income. So to give you a number, a family of four at 71,300. So sort of just digest that. That is what we call 80% of area median income or less. Those households will struggle to access housing in the community today by just means alone. So that's forgetting if they have a barrier, a bankruptcy, homelessness, those things. Forget it. Just means alone, those households are going to struggle to access housing today. So what we're in this sort of ecosystem of housing nonprofits, we consider ourselves a lot of times people get bucketed as a developer. So you can imagine we're thinking about opportunities. So we're either building and developing either rental housing or home ownership units, and also preserving existing affordable housing units to ensure that they don't leave the affordable housing pool altogether. So our work start kind of incubated in the Treasure Valley. We have some really great, we would call them novel projects in the sense that, like, some of them are clad in solar panels and built with shipping containers. And there's lots of really interesting work. We're building housing on church properties. But what's neat about it is that allows us the sort of research and development work to now then scale that work across the state. So these are now repeatable strategies that are repeatable in urban settings, rural settings, and what we call resort settings, which is like the third typology for Idaho. Think Coeur d'Alene, Sandpoint, communities like that. And so our work is really centered around that. So everything, when we wake up every day, we're really thinking about how do we create new opportunities for people to access housing. One of the things that we think is one of the most exciting areas is around home ownership. So we utilize what's called a community land trust model, and we're giving opportunities for folks who would otherwise be left behind from a market perspective, the ability to gain wealth, right? To pass down generational wealth. We believe home ownership is the greatest tool for wealth building that there is for low-income households. And so to the extent that we can, we want to move that needle and help folks access that opportunity that doesn't exist in the market.
Yeah, when we have you back, we'd like to talk in more detail about your community land trust model and how you do that to help people get towards ownership. But I just kind of wanted to share an anecdote. We had an experience with how long ago was it when they first built the first apartment complexes on the edge of our sub on our the edge of our
It was
subdivision?
like
Was it
2014.
2014? It was the first time that they had built apartments close by. It was before all the apartments boomed, and
And we're in Meridian.
there was such resistance towards it, and there was a huge misinformation campaign labeling it affordable housing, and oftentimes it gets mixed in with the term of slums, and help people understand what affordable housing is and why it's important for a community. Because there might be some initial hesitance towards the idea of affordable housing just based on lack of knowledge.
Well, I think what happens a lot of times is I think the some of that language is tied to stigmas, and there are stigmas from examples from other cities, from history, and so we try to use like a lowercase affordable housing. And what we mean by that, we a lot of times use the term community housing, workforce housing, affordable housing. We're really talking about the same population. And what that is all we're really doing is attempting to take the resources that a person has to be able to access, to spend on housing, and link them up with the cost of housing. And so when we do that, we're really, the math is 35% of their gross income is how much money folks should spend at the most on their housing costs.
At the most.
And if they're over that, we call that housing cost burdened. Mm-hmm. And the risk is if you're over that and you have a car breakdown, job loss, reduction of hours, something like that, there's a risk that you could move into this downward spiral towards homelessness. And so the idea is to keep people under that 35%. So what that means is all we're really doing is just marrying those two things together. So if you take a household at $71,000, $71,300, which most people are really surprised, well, that's considered a low-income household.
That's crazy.
Here it is.
That's quite a bit of money, but it's just out of reach for many working folks in the community. Just really like think core services, you know, school teachers, right? A school teacher, if that's the single income for the household, is going to likely fit into the category of low-income household. It's not normally what your mind goes to when you think about some of the stigmas related to affordable housing. And so there's really a lot of work to do to make sure that folks understand that the vast majority of the folks that we're talking about that we're serving are the folks that you're running into every day, right? They're making your coffee before you head to work. They're running the fire station. They're running the police station. They're teaching your kids. This audience that we're talking about is a much greater audience than a lot of times folks think. So all we're really trying to do is the challenge is the cost of housing is too high. It costs us a certain amount to build it. So we just have to level set and bring the cost of housing down to a point that it's affordable for that core audience. And if you just need a number in terms of how many people is that, that's 1 in 3 households would be considered low income. So you just run into 3 people today. The third household you'd say is likely struggling to access housing in our community. And so we're severely underbuilt from that perspective. And so what we're really trying to do is right a supply and demand issue.
Right. How many units have you already developed here in the Valley?
That's a great question. We're on our 2026 goal of 1,000 housing opportunities. We just hit the quarter mark. So we're just a little over 250. We've got another couple of hundred in process over the next year or so. And I think the momentum is just building. One of the really interesting data points that's also really helpful to know is in 47 other states, the way that you build your way out of a housing crisis is through a state funding source. And so we're one of just 3 states in the nation that does not have a funding source. And so unfortunately, the momentum to build our way out of this is slow. Because we don't necessarily have the resources to really be able to move the needle. And so what we're really doing is innovating, strategizing, trying new ideas out. In fact, we've just launched a loan fund. So now people can invest in a vehicle that allows us the resources to be able to actually produce below market rate housing in the community. And during Idaho Gives, we have a matching campaign right now for we're raising $750,000 for a down payment assistance program. And what that will do is help folks who would be homeowners access that homeownership opportunity by providing them the necessary down payment to get that mortgage amount down to a point which their mortgage payment isn't greater than that 35% we talked about.
What a great
program. So that's a way
program.
That's a way people can interact with us during Avenues, or during Idaho Gives. Is any dollars that are given to us during Idaho Gives they're all matched for that down payment assistance, and they go directly to the homeowners and the projects that we're building.
Oh, Bart, I had a question based on something you just said, because I do a lot of work in the legislature. But were you referring to the kind of, because the legislature years ago had set up a housing trust fund, but they just simply never funded it, right? Is that the vehicle? It's like the vehicle's there, but it's never been infused with funds, correct?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, the most, as we've done the research, the most common tool that states use in order to produce below market rate housing is a trust fund model. And it's usually the vehicle. And then the question is, where do the resources come from that fill the trust fund? So sometimes it's a legislative appropriation from the budget, from the state budget. Sometimes it's from transaction fees. There's lots of different ways that those get funded. There's some other kind of nuance. There's a state tax credit and a property tax exemption, which are also common in many of those states. But just to give you an example, state of Montana is working with 20 times the resources that we are to produce below market rate housing.
Wow.
So it's significant.
Larger problem to dig into. We would love to talk in more detail and kind of chase some.
I have like a thousand questions.
I've got a lot of rabbit trails that I want to go down with that. Thank you both, Scott and Bart. Awesome organizations doing a lot of good for our communities. Kevin, thank you. Thanks for bringing us all together and talking about these great, great causes. Idaho Gives coming up April 29th. Through May 3rd. That's a week away.
May 2nd.
Thank you.
April 29th to May 2nd. All four right. days.
All right. What's your goal? What is your hope for Idaho Gives?
Well, we've been right under the $4 million mark the last handful of years. So we'd love to cross that threshold. I know it's a tense fundraising environment out there because people are a little bit worried about the economy, but we're hoping Idahoans step up and we can get over that $4 million mark.
Awesome.
Okay. So one last time, Kevin, idahogives.org, correct?
That's right. Yep. idahogives.org, April 29th through May 2nd. Go support the causes you care about. Great causes like the Idaho Youth Ranch, Leap Housing. I get the pleasure of really working and being inspired by these two great leaders, Scott and Bart, and they're just great examples of nonprofit leadership and what nonprofits are doing to impact our communities, which is really special.
Right. And we can head down to watch you both karaoke a little later. Is that what we hear? So
I just found out about that. I'm not sure if there's enough time to practice.
Oh, I think you can.
Sounds fun.
I believe in you.
Who's practicing thanks, for karaoke,
thanks,
Kevin. Scott?
Thanks, Natalie and Shane.
Thanks. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. This is the Boise Bubble Podcast. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a 5-star review. Follow us on Instagram at the Boise Bubble. And for more information about our community, follow at Hello Meridian. See you next time.
Thanks so much to our sponsors for supporting local dialogue. We encourage you to check them out online. Jesse Taff of Waypoint Real Estate Group is at www.waypointidaho.com. Bryce Gonser of Fulcrum Home Loans is at www.fulcrumhomeloans.com. And Dr. Dustin Portella of Treasure Valley Dermatology can be found at www.dermatologyboise.com and on Instagram at drdustinportella.